If it bleeds, it leads. That philosophy often drives local TV news, and radio's almost as bad. Things are a little better on public radio, thanks in part to the vision of Bill Siemering. He was NPR's first program director and crafted its mission statement. Now, he works for a nonprofit organization called Developing Radio Partners. They support independent radio stations in countries making the transition to democracy, places like Mongolia. Journalists there prepared a series of profiles of ordinary people called My Life. Here's what it sounds like.
Since I retired, I've been driving a taxi. Because I'm retired, I've got nothing to do at home. It's boring to pass a day at home. At home, there's really nothing to do.
Naturally, every morning for me begins with the sound of sheep and other livestock. I wake up to this familiar sound for the fifth year now. My mom is originally from Gobi. She herded livestock all her life, and I followed the advice of my mom and became a herder too. Mongolians say, if you herd, you'll never stay hungry, so I live a good life herding. I get up at 5 a.m. I cook my tea and milk all the sheep and goats before they go grazing.
Though I work at the local music and drama theater as a dance choreographer and teacher, I think about their future and agree to teach a dance course at the Children's Center four times a week, 16 hours in total as a contractor. Today I'm training 20 children who are going to Cheetah Town, Russia for a music festival.
Right now I'm fixing a school chair. My son brought this broken chair from his school. He was told to get it fixed by his parents, so I'm fixing it now. Kids can really break things sometimes, but I can understand that. There are many of them, and not just one kid sits on one chair. Plus, they always have to move around. I fixed it so it'll probably stay okay for a while. My son will take it back to the school.
Our thanks to Press Mongolia for the excerpts of My Life. Bill Siemering was on his way back there to do more radio development training when Steve Paulson caught up with him. Bill says radio in developing world countries can be very different from what we're used to.
In Mongolia, they actually have a program in the Gobi Desert. It's a Gobi Wave radio station. They have a program where listeners call in and they're told, you know, what is your news? And it might be, you know, I've got a herd of sheep and goats out in front of my place, and this is what some of them look like, and if they belong to you, please come and get them.
Sort of the essence of local radio, I guess.
Right.
So you're really saying that, maybe this is obvious to everyone, but a local radio station really can have an impact on its community.
Oh, yes. And that's what makes my work overseas so intriguing, is because people are discovering the way they can make radio for the very first time. And so there are wonderful imaginative approaches to it. And they have a lot to say. I'll give you an example. In South Africa, there's a station near Cape Town on a sandy flat. About 700,000 people live in this township. And there's radio station Radio Zibonelli, which has as its mission statement to improve the quality of the health of the community. And by health, they don't mean just physical health, but they mean environmental, cultural, educational. And so they believe that it's very important to be active in the community. So they sponsor, for example, a cleanup campaign, and thousands of youngsters come out on a Saturday morning to pick up the plastic bags that are blowing about. They'll sponsor a tree planting Saturday and a cultural awareness day. And the community health workers come in and tell each day what's going on. Maybe there's an outbreak of measles in one section or flu season and things like that. And they have the very best teachers give a summary of the year's courses at the end of the year so the students will better pass the exam. One time they brought in warring taxi drivers to talk to the community and have the community say, okay, tell them how you want the taxis to be run. And at one time they got wind of a possible school strike and they brought the different parties together to resolve it using their neutral position as a broadcaster to mediate this. So when I asked the manager what he said were his greatest successes, he said our greatest success was when we prevented the school strike. And that was something that was never broadcast. So they saw their role as really being central to community development.
That's really kind of remarkable. I mean, I can't imagine hearing a comparable story in the United States of a radio station doing a story that would prevent a school strike.
And they operate out of a truck container. And they've been operating out of that for 10 years.
Out of a truck container?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You know, a semi-truck, the back.
Right.
They just have that detached and that's where the studio is.
Well, and I suppose that's one of the great things about radio in a poor country is you can really do it on the cheap. I mean, in some ways, much cheaper than a lot of other media.
Yes. I mean, it's all a matter of scale. Their annual operating budget there is $170,000 a year. In the Gobi, it's $7,000. For a station up near the Siberian border in Mongolia, they get by on about $2,500-$3,000 a year. The manager earns $40 a month, I might add.
And then if you're a reporter, a radio reporter, really all you need is a microphone and a tape recorder.
That's the beauty of it. And it's very easy to learn. It's one of the one of the secrets, I suppose, we don't like to share with people is that radio
pretty
is
much
really
anyone
easy,
can
you know?
Do it, yeah.
Anybody can do this.
And then the other thing about radio, as opposed to, say, television or newspapers, is in a country where there might be high rates of illiteracy, pretty much everyone has access to radio and can understand what's going on.
Yes, it's the most accessible medium, and by that, having both access to a radio and also to be able to be on the air. So it's very interesting that the World Bank now has a community radio initiative, and they see it, as I've just been describing it, as part of community development. They see it as part of poverty reduction programs because it enables people to air and solve their own problems, to hold government officials accountable for transparency in government, and to celebrate their own culture. So these are all wonderful values and goals and accomplishments. And one of the things I hope to do is to bring back some of these stories to this country because I think many local stations are losing their local programming a lot.
Let me ask you about some of the other stories that you've heard about in some of these places you've worked. I mean, for instance, I've heard about a voter education push in Sierra Leone that apparently had a real impact on voter turnout.
Yes. Andrew Croma, who is a private station owner and manager, he has two stations, one in Freetown and another in a provincial capital called Bo, where I have visited. They did voter education, and as a result, there was a larger voter turnout in his listening area than other parts of the country. He also has a program called Mr. Owl, and Mr. Owl is looking out for malfeasance in the community, and he reports on these things, such as a local government person that's using his government vehicle as a taxi or escorting a illegal diamond runner across borders and things like that. So as a result of his reporting on this, they actually established a community affairs department within the police department and also increased the policeman's salary so they might not be quite as tempted to do the kind of graft and other wrongdoing.
Now, certainly one of the biggest stories to come out of Africa in the last 15 years or so was what happened between the Hutu and the Tutsi in Rwanda. And I've heard about one news operation, I guess it was in Burundi, where there was a team of reporters made up of both Hutu and Tutsi.
Right. Those that have seen Hotel Rwanda or have read about that period know that radio was used for hate and for genocide. They were instructing people, listeners, to go out and kill more. One of the phrases was, the graves are not yet full. A very chilling, horrific thing to say on the radio. And so as a result, in neighboring Burundi, a number of stations went on the air in contrast to be oriented toward peace and reconciliation. And Studio Jumbo, which is run by the Search for Common Ground based in Washington here, does send out reporters, Tutsi and Hutu, to cover a story together and report on it. They also have women's clubs, 400 of them around the country, where women go out and make gardens and prepare homes for returning refugees while their husbands had been out shooting at each other or killing each other. And then they've had these soap operas that portray Hutus and Tutsis working together in a way that isn't quite all that common on the ground, but it creates this picture that is possible for people.
Now, you've been working as a consultant, I guess you could say, in a lot of these countries in the developing world. What have you found most inspiring as you've visited some of these radio stations?
I've been inspired by the way they're using radio to build community from these examples that I've talked about. And they're doing so much with so little. I don't hear many complaints about, well, if we only had another studio, we could do X, Y, and Z. Or if we only could double our budget, they're just doing it. You know, they're just doing it because of their belief in the power of radio and the importance of radio in their community.
Well, Bill, thank you.
Could I add just one
sure.
other thing?
Uh-huh.
I just want to give an example of how simply one can change perception, perhaps. You know, one of my pet peeves is the way television weather tends to want to frighten people. Their frame of good weather is maybe between 65 and 75, you know, with no wind or clouds. Even in times of drought, I've heard them say, well, got some bad news, the rain's coming. Totally ignorant of the fact, of course, that without rain, life would end on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of weather mongers. I mean, they just try to create fear about the least variation in weather. And I would just offer this as an alternative. So instead of saying, it's going to be bad tomorrow, going to have rain, I would like to hear some weatherman or woman read this little poem, April Rain Song by Langston Hughes. Let the rain kiss you. Let the rain beat upon your head with silver liquid drops. Let the rain sing you a lullaby. The rain makes still pools on the sidewalk. The rain makes running pools in the gutters. The rain plays a little sleep song on your roof at night. And I love the rain.
That's lovely. Thank you.
It's a very different way of looking at rain.
Right.
Bill Siemering is president of Developing Radio Partners and was NPR's first director of programming. In 1971, he wrote NPR's original mission statement, which we on TT Books still find inspiring. Among other points, the NPR mandate was to regard the individual differences among men with respect and joy rather than derision and hate, and encourage a sense of active, constructive participation rather than apathetic helplessness.